Welcome to Baseball America's College Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk college baseball.
I'm Teddy Cahill. We've got Mike Lanana here, and we're ready to talk about college baseball. It's a huge week coming up, but we want to talk about the weekend that was before we get into some of these conference tournaments that are coming your way this week. The regular season wrapped up for most teams around the country this week. Kind of some wild finishes out there, Mike, and it's a great time of year in college baseball. There's a lot going on.
Oh yeah, this is when things start to get crazy. You see a lot of these, and a lot of these smaller conferences tournaments around the country too that are starting up, a lot of bid thieves, a lot of desperation time for a lot of these teams out there. And we got a sneak preview of that this weekend. We saw a lot happen in the Big 12, some shaking up there. We saw Florida, the number one team in the country, get swept by Mississippi State. They remain number one, though. Their resume is still the best resume in the country. But, yeah, this is the time of year you start hearing more about the draft, too. The draft is coming up soon. It's a busy time in Baseball America. It's a hectic time for all these players and coaches, and it's only going to get crazier the deeper we go.
Absolutely. It's hard to believe that we're already just 1 week away from the selection Monday. And everything that comes with that. So, Mike, you touched on it there. Florida this week, they'd already won the SEC. They clinched that last week at home. They go to Starkville this week. Mississippi State really needed this. They needed something this weekend. They came into the weekend 12-15 in the SEC. Their RPI wasn't that great. It wasn't that bad, but it wasn't that great. They needed something to kind of push them into the tournament, and they got it. With a sweep of Florida. Despite that, Florida remained number one in the top 25. We just felt like Florida still has pretty much by far the best resume in the country. They're the only Power 5 conference school that has lost less than two losing weekends. This was their first. They have 24 top 50 RPI wins. That's the most in the country. They've really done everything they can all year. They're the SEC champs until this weekend. And they hit a speed bump in Mississippi State. And Mike, you know, what do you make of what the Bulldogs did this weekend?
Yeah, well, like you said, it was something they needed to do. Not necessarily to sweep, but obviously to win a game or ultimately win a series was something they very much needed to do to improve their postseason standing. We had a lot of questions last week. I know I did on Twitter, people asking me about why isn't Mississippi State in our field. Well, that's going to change. They're going to be in our field. They've played their way into it, obviously sweeping the number one team in the country. It's been a tumultuous season for Mississippi State, starting with a sweep against Southern Miss opening weekend and then Annie Canizero getting pushed out there at Mississippi State. They've dealt with a lot. It's been a roller coaster. But you have to give those players and you have to give Gary Henderson credit at the top of that team, the head coach there now. You have to give them credit for keeping it together, for rallying here late in the season and putting themselves in good position here. Now they're back into the NCAA tournament picture. So to me, it was a loud, loud statement by the Bulldogs. And I think for all three of us, though, all of us on the conference call last night, there really wasn't much argument about leaving Florida at number one, though. I think we all realized that this weekend was not a must-win situation for Florida by any stretch. They proceeded cautiously with their pitchers and made sure that they were good to go. So to me, I think it was both teams did what they needed to do. Mississippi State needed to pick up some big wins, and Florida needed to make sure that they have all their players ready to go and chomping at the bit for the postseason coming up.
Yeah, Florida rested Brady Singer, or pulled Brady Singer. They scratched him from his start on Friday with a hamstring strain. It's not a serious injury. He'll be back. He'll be fine. They'll be fine as a team, I think. But I know that this is not the time of year you want this kind of thing to happen. I'm going to be very interested to see how they handle the SEC tournament this week, just how much they want to go out and win it, how they go about managing their pitching this week and what that leads to. But ultimately, even if they, you know, flame out in Hoover and this stretch continues into next week, they're still going to be the number one seed going into the NCAA tournament. So they're still going to get a home regional, and they're still going to get, you know, a pretty favorable regional draw. And ultimately, they're going to end up in a position where Brady Singer takes the mound at McKeithen Stadium on Saturday in a regional. And if the Gators still need a spark by then, I feel very confident about Brady Singer's ability to spark this team and to light a fire that can keep it going throughout the postseason. Nothing about this weekend was particularly good for Florida. I don't know that there are that many positives that they can take. I guess Deacon Lippitt hit pretty well on Saturday. I think he hit pretty well all weekend, actually. But, you know, they're very small things. But mostly this weekend, just a weekend to forget for the Gators. They'll move on. But a key weekend for Mississippi State, and they move into the top 25 at number 25. Also joining this week is another MSU. Missouri State checks in at 24, having won their second straight Missouri Valley title. They went down to DBU and won a series. And, Mike, they have won 36 of their last 40 conference games over the last 2 years. And the Bears, obviously, they produced some big-time talent. Jake Berger last year. Jeremy Ironman looks like a potential first-rounder again this year. I mean, they've been on our radar all year long. But this was, to me, this was a statement.
Yeah, they've been right on the periphery all year. Every week we talk about the top 25. They're a team that always comes up. Just resume-wise, RPI-wise, all of that, we were just waiting for that last push, and it just so happened that it came here in the final weekend of the season with the series win at Dallas Baptist, which in the Missouri Valley is as big a statement as you can make for a contending team. Those two have gone neck and neck at the top of the conference the last couple of years. Dallas Baptist has had a very good year in its own right this season. So for Missouri State, certainly, I mean, this is it's a team that we've liked, and this is just for me at least the moment where it sort of solidified and clarified things a little bit, and almost not that they proved themselves, but it definitely made a huge statement in terms of the quality of team they are and the kind of competition that they're going to bring to the NCAA tournament in the next couple of weeks.
I think what was most impressive for me about the Bears is that they had, I guess it was about 5 or 6 weeks ago, they had this incredibly difficult week where they played Arkansas and then midweek, and then hosted Oregon State, and then played Mizzou in a midweek the following week, and they went 0 for that week, and that was a really tough week. Those are some really good teams that they were playing, but they bounced back from that in a big way, and they really took it down the stretch. They played very well. They continued to take care of their business in the Missouri Valley, and I thought the way they responded to that, because, you know, that could have gone the other way. That easily could have just snowballed on them, I feel like. But it didn't. They have an older team, a team that's been to Super Regionals a year ago, that knows how to take that stuff and you know, put it behind them and, you know, go back to doing what they needed to do to win their conference. And that's the first time that Missouri State has won back-to-back regular season titles since they joined the Missouri Valley in 1991. So very impressive all around from the Bears.
And one thing I will say about Missouri State, too, is passionate fan base. We've heard a lot from Missouri State fans this year, fans that were really, really pushing for us to rank them. And, hey, we appreciate the feedback, all kinds of feedback. We want people to care about our poll and to pester us if they don't like something that we're doing. You finally got your wish. It only took until the last weekend of the season. But if you're a Missouri State fan and you've listened to these podcasts and you've been just sitting there stewing, thinking, when are they going to talk about Missouri State? When is Missouri State going to get in? Well, here you go. This is the podcast for you, Missouri State Nation.
Absolutely. And, you know, I spoke with third baseman Matt Brown last week for Off the Wall. And, you know, he talked about how this team has a championship mentality and he thinks they can – you know, go out and make some noise in the postseason again this year. So this week was a big statement for that. And it also, it should push them up to the 2 line. They probably are going to end up back in Arkansas. Sorry. but they're very familiar with that. And it worked out pretty well for them last year. And maybe they've played themselves out of that since Arkansas may well be a national seed. But we'll get to that later in the podcast. Before then, I want to talk about another team from Texas, the Texas Longhorns, who this week, going into the weekend, they were 2 games behind Oklahoma State in the Big 12 standings, 3 games to play. Texas, though, comes out with the Big 12 title. They swept TCU at home, while Oklahoma State got swept at home by Texas Tech. And Texas claims its first Big 12 title since 2011. Cody Clemens had a fantastic weekend. Two huge home runs on Friday night, including a walk-off shot. And then he homered in his first plate appearance on Saturday to really get the Longhorns off on the right foot and push them towards the title. And, you know, this Longhorns team in May has really been spectacular. They were just a few weeks ago, they lost a series at West Virginia, had fallen back to three games out of first place with six games to play. They had a really tough series on the schedule still at Texas Tech. And it did not, the odds were not in their favor to win this Big 12 title. But in part because Oklahoma State faltered down the stretch, yes, that is a part of this. But Texas did everything they could. They go 5-1 in the Big 12 down the stretch, win a series in Lubbock, sweep TCU, and they come out with a really great series win. They get the trophy, just a great moment there in Austin.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Especially with everything they've gone through this year, with the passing of obviously the great Augie Garrido, and they've had a lot of ups and downs on the baseball field as well this year. It's a team that we really liked coming into this year, primarily because of their pitching staff and how deep they were pitching wise. But you mentioned Cody Clemens, and I feel like every week I always look at box scores or watch the games and see him stepping up and into some sort of clutch situation and coming through. He's really put them on his back offensively these last few weeks. And there have been other guys who have stepped up as well. Zach Zubia comes to mind as someone who's been really good this year for Texas. But Cody Clemens has really claimed that leadership role on this Longhorn team and has been huge for them down the stretch. And the way they're playing right now, the way David Pierce has them rolling, they seem like a really dangerous club and a team, especially now that they're firmly right back in the hosting conversation. They're going to host. They're going to be dangerous. You could certainly see them making a deep run at the very least into Super Regionals, given what they've done this year and how they finished this season.
Yeah, it's a very dangerous club for the postseason. You can read more about Texas today at baseballamerica.com in Off the Bat. And when I was talking with David Pierce yesterday, you know, he said that he thinks there's more in the tank. He doesn't think, you know, they're playing their best baseball of the year right now, but he thinks that they can still improve, that, you know, he sees room for improvement in pretty much every facet of the game. And if they are able to find another level, they're really dangerous. You know, they have a solid pitching staff. Nolan Kanem threw a complete game on Thursday night that, you know, he really, you know, stepped up and looked like the ace of the staff.
And he's got the talent to do it.
He absolutely does
throughout the postseason. So that's certainly an encouraging sign.
And their bullpen was great this weekend. I don't think their bullpen allowed a run all weekend long. And yeah, they've got various options they can turn to down there. And, you know, like Mike mentioned, Zubia has been very good hitting behind Cody Clemens. And now they have David Hamilton and Duke Ellis hitting in front of Clemens. And that's a really good top half of the lineup. And you know, whoever gets paired up with Texas throughout the postseason is in for a tough matchup.
No, there's no question. And it was fun to see how this Big 12 race unfolded, because I know we were scratching our heads a little bit trying to figure out which way it was going to go. Obviously, you have to give Oklahoma State a ton of credit for the run they made, especially at the start of Big 12 play, to rise to the top of those standings and to turn themselves. I mean, they got off to a tough start this year. You look at their non-conference record, and they did not look like a tournament team. So for them to be able to turn things around and put themselves in the tournament by leading the Big 12 for as long as they did, credit to Josh Holliday and the rest of that staff. And, you know, give credit to Texas Tech, too, for going on the road and sweeping that series. You know, they're a team that, you know, you expected. I mean, we had them in the top 10 all year for the most part, and you expect them to win this conference. They were, you know, looking at fourth place potentially in the Big 12, and they stepped up in a big way. And, you know, they're fifth in the RPI right now, and it was something that I think they needed to sort of exert their dominance a little bit in conference play. And so for me, that was an encouraging sign if I'm a Red Raiders fan.
They also really needed to show they could win on the road, I think, to show the committee something. They hadn't won a road series all year, so came down to the last one, but they got it, and they got it in a huge way. They never, that series never really felt that close. you know, they really went out, and coming off their finals break, they went to Stillwater with something to prove, and they did prove it. So they inserted themselves right back into the top eight seed race, and they're going to go to Oklahoma City this week in the Big 12 tournament with a chance to maybe move into that along with Texas. I think both of those teams can do it, especially if one of them winds up with holding another trophy this week in Bricktown. Elsewhere, the ACC race also went down to the wire. It was maybe a little less dramatic, but North Carolina swept Virginia Tech to hold on to the top seed in this week's ACC tournament. Clemson did everything they could to push UNC to the finish, sweeping Pittsburgh on the road. But in the end, the tiebreaker got the Tigers. And
got the Tigers by the toe. There you go. I slipped up. That was a good one, though. It was a good one, but I slipped up a little bit on the delivery. I'm a little bit ashamed. We need to go back and edit this out. I need to record that again so that we could fix that. But yeah, no, as you mentioned, I mean, it was both teams swept this weekend. Both teams did what they had to do. It was just tiebreaker rules. Both teams were 22-8 in the ACC. It just so happened to
won their
out.
Respective divisions.
Yeah, so, I mean, no knock on Clemson whatsoever. UNC gets the number one overall seed in the ACC tournament. And Mike Fox wins ACC Coach of the Year. You look at...
For the first time in, like, his 20-whatever-year career at UNC.
It's kind of wild that that's the first time ever, especially given the College World Series teams they've had over the years. The teams that, you know, in 2006 and 2007 against Oregon State and the title series. I mean, they've had some really good teams over the years. So it is surprising that this is the first year that he's won it. But you look at North Carolina. You look at what they've done this year. Obviously, they got off to a difficult start. They dropped out of our top 25 early in the season, got off to a 7-7 start, and lost their first ACC series on the road at Louisville. And really, from that moment, they picked things up. They pieced things together. They found the right formula on the mound and lineup-wise. And I wrote the cover feature for our last story on North Carolina on their analytical approach, their analytics department that they have that's student run, and how that's impacted the way that they play, the way they manage their team. And certainly, you know, in their second year doing that, that's played a role in diagnosing the issues that they face and fixing them faster than maybe they would have fixed them in years past, finding the right roles for guys based on data and the analytical information that they have. But you know, UNC, just a sensational finish for the Tar Heels. This is the team that we envisioned in the preseason, given all their depth on the mound and the returning experience that they had in the lineup. And the biggest news for UNC, other than winning the ACC, is they get their ace back. They got Gianluca Dellatri back after not pitching since February, only made two starts this year and missed the rest of the year. He pitched on Saturday against Virginia Tech, only through the first four innings, but he looked excellent. He was up to 94. He was commanding his fastball really, really well in the low 90s. 20 of his first 22 pitches were strikes. He was also commanding his breaking ball and his changeup. Looked like he hadn't missed a single start. Looked like he was ready to go another four innings if they needed him to throw that many. He only finished with a little over 40 pitches in four innings. So that's a huge boost for Carolina going forward. He's going to pitch again in this ACC tournament at some point this week to get him ready for regionals. But when you have a team that's kind of mixed and matched a little bit on the mound this year, weekend rotation rise, they've tried a few different orders, eventually settled on JUCO transfer Cooper Criswell. It's a tough name to say. It's alliterative. Cooper Criswell as their Friday starter in place of Luca Dellatri. But now you get that additional arm, it makes them that much deeper, and it makes them scarier because this is a team that we envisioned before the season as a number six preseason team.
I think it was really significant because while they finished with the record that indicates that they're the team that we thought they were coming into the year, this hadn't been the UNC team that we signed up for. You know, this is a team that we thought was going to do it with pitching, that had this rotation of Dellatri, Baum, and Bergner, and we thought that an incredibly deep bullpen. And the incredibly deep bullpen has showed up.
Yeah.
The rotation has not. And you know, before Dellatri's return, you're kind of looking at this and wondering, like, okay, do they actually have three starters that they rely on? Like, what would happen in a game 3 of a super regional or a game 7 of a regional? Like, what happens then? And you know, I think Dellatri's return really answers a lot of those questions that, you know, it lines up how whether they want him or Criswell in the first game of a regional. They have the other one in the next game, and then you have Bergner, and if they can get Tyler Baum going or however they want to line it up, if there were to be a fourth game, you know, I think they're now set up in a way on the mound that is advantageous, and they have enough talent throughout the lineup. It's maybe not the flashiest lineup in the world, but it is a deeper lineup, especially as Ashton McGee has come on in the second half here. And
Brandon Riley, too.
Brandon Riley really stepping up into that three hole. You know, they hit the lineup changes all the time, but Brandon Riley can hit in the top of the lineup, and Brandon Martirano at the he typically hits more in the bottom of the order, and he has the second most home runs on the team. So they have some lineup depth. They have that deep bullpen, and I think Dellatri coming back really is that last piece of the puzzle that the Tar Heels really needed to feel like, again, they can be serious contenders in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think the fact that they had, you mentioned the weekend rotation, I think the fact that they had Cooper Criswell settle into that Friday role and gain some confidence, and the rest of the team gain confidence in him, is only going to help and gives them more flexibility on the mound, because, like you said, you have two guys that you can choose from now for that role. Essentially, you know, two Friday quality aces. You know, Cooper Criswell isn't the kind of guy, he's not going to throw 95, but he's very polished. He commands it. He's 6'6", throws from a tough angle. He's got a good starter's repertoire. And it also allows you guys like Tyler Baum and Austin Bergner. They've been inconsistent this year, but they've had flashes of dominance. They have the stuff to dominate, but it allows you to have a little bit of a shorter leash on them and not have to lean on them as heavily. And you can lean on Dellatri and Criswell, you know, going forward in this tournament. So I think it puts them in a really good position pitching wise. It's like a huge trade at the trade deadline and getting an ace. It's like the Astros trading for Verlander last year. Not saying Dellatri's as good as Verlander. That's a big jump to make, but it could be a comparable kind of boost to a team going into the postseason.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no question you want your opening day starter back. You know, no matter what team we're talking about, that's what you want, and they got it back. One team that isn't getting its opening day starter back is Florida State, but the Seminoles have continued to roll this season after losing Tyler Holton. They've been very impressive, and this weekend was another very impressive series for them against North Carolina State. They get two walk-off home runs and extra innings to win that series in dramatic fashion. And I felt like they really needed that one to kind of shore up their hosting chances, like that they're now pretty well assured of hosting, yeah, regardless of what happens in the ACC tournament. And they're right back to the edge of the national seed discussion. And there are a lot of really interesting things about their resume. They played one of the harder ACC schedules. You know, they were in the tougher division, and then they caught both Duke and UNC in crossover. So those are the top two teams in the other division. And Florida State wore it a little bit ACC schedule-wise, but they come out looking pretty good.
Yeah, no, I think it's – we both agreed that it was a series that they needed to remain firm in the hosting discussion. And they did it in dramatic fashion with two walk-off wins and back-to-back nights. They really, really had to battle for it. And that shows a lot about Mike Martin's team and the character of his team. And, you know, they do have a lot of veterans, guys with postseason experience, guys who've played in Omaha, guys who have been in these tough moments before that are now juniors and seniors that are helping to lead them, especially really offensively. So I think they're a team that is... You know, to me, what this points to is I don't think they're going to be phased going into the postseason. I think they're going to be just as dangerous as they've always been. And this is really, you know, for me, especially these last few years, has been FSU's MO. You know, we have high thoughts of them in the preseason, usually rank them pretty high. We had them number 3 overall this year before the season started. Struggled a little bit early on against a tough schedule in the ACC, but here they are right back where we thought they would be, a number 10 in the RPI. In the conversation, at the very least, for a national seed. They've had some adversity. They've dealt with some injuries, as you mentioned. Tyler Holton was a huge one early on, and that had, I think, a huge impact on their struggles in the early season, just figuring out what to do on the mound. But here they are. They haven't figured it out. There's a reason why Mike Martin is the winningest coach in college baseball history.
Absolutely. So, Mike, let's look. We've talked about these top 8 seeds and can some of these teams get them, and I know that's a question on a lot of fans' minds. As we go into a week that is really going to have a lot of impact on the various bubbles in the NCAA tournament race. So a week ago, in our projected field of 64, we had a top eight that included Florida, Stanford, Georgia, Arkansas, North Carolina, Oregon State, Ole Miss, and Clemson. And sneak peek, maybe not so sneak peek, I don't know when you're listening to this, in the projected field of 64, we're dropping on Tuesday. Those are the eight top eight seeds. Those are still the eight. But Texas Tech, Florida State, and Texas especially, I feel like they're kind of on the edge, and maybe they can play their way into it with a big week this week.
No doubt. I mean, that to me is the part of conference tournaments that I think is the most fun, is you see who is willing to stand up, who is able to stand up and make this last push. This is a great opportunity in these bigger tournaments for these teams to build up their RPI, add some marquee wins to the resume, bolster some things a little bit, and maybe force their way into a national seed conversation. I remember Clemson doing it a couple of years ago under their first year of Monty Lee, winning the championship against Florida State.
How long was that day for you there?
That was about a 10-hour day. I'm hoping that doesn't repeat this week, but it was a 10-hour day because
some lengthy rain delays there.
Because of the rain, it was a wild day. But that's why I'm bringing it up as an example, because I can never erase that from my memory because it was just an insane day. But in any event, you know, that's an example that comes to mind of a team that can play its way into the national eight seed conversation by winning a conference tournament or at least making a deep push into the conference tournament. So while I feel good about these eight teams that I have, if the field were to be created today and conference tournaments weren't a thing, I think these are without question the eight teams. But yes, I mean, it could change a little bit over these next few days as we see how these tournaments play out.
Honestly, I'm going to be very interested to see how the committee handles Texas Tech. They're up to number 5 in the RPI, but they finished 3rd in the Big 12 at 15-9. They, as I previously mentioned, hadn't really won a road series before this weekend, but then they did in spectacular fashion. I don't know. They're rather interesting, and they're one of the more interesting resumes to me. And how they get handled is going to be interesting. They could make this a lot easier on everyone by just going out and winning at Bricktown. But if they don't get it done this week, how they get handled, how deep they go this week, I'm going to be very interested in seeing that. And I feel like Clemson, maybe, I don't know, they're 11 in the RPI right now. They're maybe not as safe as what it would be, what you would think, given an ACC team that has 22 ACC wins and 43 wins overall. But, you know, that 11 RPI, I mean, Florida State's ahead of them. Texas Tech's ahead of them. You know, if things don't go right for them in Durham, they feel slightly vulnerable. And Arkansas, all the way up at 4, talking about how weird Texas Tech's resume is, try Arkansas out with number 4 RPI, 18-12 in the SEC, hasn't won a road series, just
6-13 on the road this
year.
Yeah,
and but they have 20 top 50 wins. It's a strange one, and I think they are vulnerable this week. If they were to go 0-2 in Hoover, I think the Razorbacks maybe are falling. They would be the team that if someone steps up in that Florida State, Texas Tech group, Arkansas maybe is the most vulnerable of these current top eight seeds.
I would agree with that. You know, I think in general this year, other than the very top of our rankings, there has been a lot of that looking at these resumes, a lot of just oddities, honestly, things that make you scratch your head a little bit. We've seen that a lot with a lot of these teams. We've seen it with Texas Tech all year. We've seen it with Florida State all year. You know, Clemson as a team, we saw it with a little bit early on. Although I feel with them at 22-8, unless they go 0-2 in Durham, I still feel good about it. But you never know what the committee.
I mean,
is
that 0-2 would be a bad 0-2.
True.
If it were to happen, that would do nothing positive to their RPI, which already again is not in the world's greatest spot.
Yeah, obviously you would feel a little more comfortable as a Tigers fan if they were inside the top 10.
In general, if you're wondering what your team needs to do this week, I think it starts with maybe don't go 0-2. That feels like a good start.
It's helpful. It's helpful to, in general, the committee seems to like to, I mean, in my experience, you know, I'm not an expert, but in general, it seems like the committee likes teams who win games. I think in general, the more you win, the better off you're going to be. So if I had to give some advice to any team in the country, how do I get in the tournament? I would just say, hey, win.
Also, yeah, just don't try and back in. Like, I feel like a lot of the questions in the chat this week that I've gotten on Twitter over the weekend are like, what's the least we can do? Like, I don't know. Maybe that's not...
That's not the right attitude. Yeah. If I'm a coach, I'm not addressing my team. Hey, guys, what's the least we can do today to win this game? Like, how can we win with the bare minimum amount of effort?
I do get the mindset, but, like, because you want to know, like, if everything goes wrong, are we still okay? Like, I get that aspect of it, but I don't know. Have a little more faith in your team, I would say, and expect them to go out and win a couple games this week, and then they'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, every team other than, you know, the very top of the top has a little bit of uncertainty going into it, at least if not in getting into the tournament, you know, in terms of hosting and national seed and things like that. You know, other than, you know, a team like Florida, Stanford, you know, those guys at the very top, there are things that can change. There are things that are flexible here. So, I mean, the best course of action is just to try not to lose. Just try to continue to do what you've been doing all year. Or if you haven't won a lot this year, win the tournament.
That is the beauty of conference tournaments, right? Especially in leagues that are usually one bid leagues. You know, it didn't matter that you didn't win the conference regular season, because you have a chance now, and you have a chance to play your way in. And Mike, let's talk about some of those teams that could play their way in or play their way out this week. Let's look at the bubble. I think the most interesting part of the bubble is A&M and Kentucky.
Yeah.
Two SEC teams that went 13-17 in conference this year, but still have top 25 RPIs.
Yeah, it's head scratching.
13-17 is not getting it done. And in the SEC, so the format, the way it works is, the top four teams get byes, and every teams 5 through 12 essentially have a play-in game on Tuesday. And Kentucky, a play-in game to get to the more regular double elimination portion of the tournament before it turns into single elimination again. It's a strange format down in Hoover.
These are all a little bit strange.
It's true. So Kentucky and A&M are the first two games of the SEC tournament Tuesday morning. And for both of those teams, those feel like absolute must wins, because the way the committee looks at this, conference tournament games get counted to your conference record. So lose those games and the Aggies and the Wildcats would be 13-18 in the SEC. And I'm going to say that makes for an anxious week. And frankly, that's probably just bubble out.
Yeah, it's a very peculiar situation for both of those teams, just because given the way that they both started their seasons, given just the talent on both rosters and what we envisioned for both teams. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, it was a couple months ago, we're talking about Kentucky as if, you know, they were one of the best teams in the country. And you look at the talent on the team and you could still make that statement in terms of talent that, okay, maybe they should be one of the best in the country. But for whatever reason, they've struggled here down the stretch in SEC play. They've dropped series. I mean, like getting swept this weekend did them no favors. I mean, being 13-17.
If they just won once at Vanderbilt,
yeah,
they could feel so much better about it.
I mean, at some point you are what your record says you are. And the reality is, as much as we like this Wildcat team, they've put themselves in a really tough position here in a must-win situation against Auburn, which is not an easy win. No win in the SEC is easy.
And it's Auburn. This Auburn team is on the hosting bubble. And so they want this is not a case where Auburn can just say, you know, whatever happens this week happens. Like, no, Auburn's trying to host, and they need to win that game to be able to host probably.
Yeah, it's just a lot of bubbles going at it. And when bubbles go
at it. A&M knows about bubbles though, right?
Oh yeah, A&M knows a lot about bubbles. So for those of you who aren't familiar, they blow bubbles. They have bubble machine. They have like a bubble machine after their home runs. Is it a machine? It's got to be a machine.
No, those are machines.
You can't just have
one. I'm sure there are some people out there with like just like the little wand bubbles. But no, they're like some like serious like very intricate machines.
Yeah, because I was there. I was in College Station for a Super Regional. I saw the bubbles. I didn't see the machines, but I had to assume just because, I mean,
tweet your bubble machine at @mlanana.
Yeah, I want to see your bubbles. I want to see how the bubbles are made for sure. But yeah, Texas A&M knows a lot about bubbles. They also have a tough draw. They're in a very similar situation, the exact same situation as Kentucky. They're facing Vanderbilt. who Vanderbilt is obviously coming off the sweep of Kentucky this past weekend. It's Teddy's going to be there. He's going to keep you updated. Whoever wins, whoever loses in that tournament, it's going to have a big ripple effect on our 64 and on what the committee decides next week on Monday. So
I'll tell you, I don't think anyone's really going to need coffee in Hoover tomorrow. I think that we're going to get some immediate drama, and you know, the first two games of this tournament, there is going to be no settling into it. It's going to be must-win scenarios from the jump. And I mean, like, that's not something that we usually get in Hoover. It takes a little while to build some of the suspense sometimes, at least into the night.
I bet you still drink some coffee, though.
You know, I'm not that big of a coffee guy. You know this.
I know that, but at some point it's
gonna... maybe not tomorrow, but there will be lots of coffee consumed.
That tournament, to survive that tournament, you need coffee.
It's a bear of a tournament.
Yeah, it's.
So looking elsewhere on the bubble, beyond the Kentucky A&M conundrum, let's look out west for a second here, Mike, with Arizona and Washington. And I know we've talked about this before. Arizona this week won a series against Arizona State, got a huge win on Saturday in the third game to claim the series. And that was really a must win because they're sitting at 12-15 in the Pac-12 going into the final weekend. Frankly, this might be a must sweep when they go to Oregon just to get back to 500. They have the RPI, they have a lot of things going for it, but if they don't win the series this weekend, they're done. And even if they do, I mean, they're still going to be what, like sixth in the Pac-12? So
yeah, they're sixth right now. And they're facing eighth place Oregon. You know, I think they can do it. I think there's a path there, but I'm not sleeping well if I'm on Arizona right now. You know, I'm nervous heading into this weekend.
And that's a team that has yet to win a weekend on the road. They have no win in road weekend. So much like Texas Tech last week, Arizona needs one in its final weekend to really, you know, give itself a chance. Washington, meanwhile, welcomes Stanford in. And this is a really interesting series from a few different perspectives. So Stanford is trying to clinch the Pac-12 title. They just need one win or an Oregon State loss to do it, and it would be their first title since 2004. So that Stanford trying to do that on the one end. Washington, their RPI is not good, but they are tied with UCLA for third in the Pac-12. They're 18-9 in the Pac-12, and we've seen in the past teams from the Pac-12. UCLA did this last year with RPIs in the 60s. They, if they finish really well in the Pac-12, they can get in. And it seems like that's the position the Huskies are in this weekend, but they can't afford to be swept this weekend.
No, they can't. They need at least one win against Stanford this weekend for the mere fact that their RPI is at 71 right now. A win against Stanford, the number two RPI team in the country, obviously that RPI gets a little better at the very least. They need a win this weekend. You know, they're a team that, you know, really the middle of the Pac-12, we've been waiting for one of those teams to emerge this year, whether it be Washington, Arizona, Cal, at one point seemed like a team that had a chance to break into that conversation as well. You know, to me, it seems like Washington has the easiest path here in that they don't necessarily have to win a series. They just have to win one game this weekend to really secure things for them. Arizona, it's a little shakier. It's doable, but it's a little shakier. It's the Pac-12 and really the, you know, the West Coast in general, other than the top of the top teams this year. It's been tough to figure out. You know, we saw go into the Big West. We saw Cal State Fullerton come all the way back after their tough start to win that conference. But you know, other than that, in terms of at large teams, it's been tough to figure out. Okay, who belongs in this tournament field, especially when you have a conference like the SEC where you have all these teams who have, you know, RPIs in the 20s and 30s and teens that have losing records in the SEC, and trying to balance that with a team like Washington that's 18-9 in the Pac-12, but 28-22 overall and 71 in RPI. It's, you know, I think the committee has some really tough decisions cut out for them coming up this weekend. So I don't envy them. Although then again, we're doing the same exact thing. We're just...
we are. We definitely are. Mike, you're going to be at the ACC tournament.
Oh, I am.
There are a couple bubble teams there, Georgia Tech and Miami. Miami, of course, trying to secure a regionals berth in Jim Morris's final year. What do you feel? What's your read on those two teams, the Yellow Jackets and the Canes, going into this week?
Yeah, well, I think they're both certainly capable. And looking at the path that they have to take, I mean, they both play on Tuesday. Miami plays Notre Dame. That's a winnable game for the Hurricanes. Georgia Tech plays Pitt. Again, that's a winnable game for the Yellow Jackets. You know, from there, obviously, it gets harder. Miami faces Clemson, and Georgia Tech faces North Carolina. Two games that are going to be very difficult, given that those are the teams that won their respective divisions. But, you know, for Georgia Tech, I've seen them a couple times this year. And to me, I mean, they have the pieces to make a run in this tournament, especially if they get their offense going the way it went this past weekend against Duke. They hosted Duke. They dropped 20 runs on them on the second game. They won that series. If they're able to bring those bats, Joey Bart, the ACC Player of the Year, if he's hot, if he's swinging it well, they have a chance to maybe make some noise in the tournament this year. They've done it before. They've won the ACC tournament before where they weren't an at-large team necessarily. I don't think they necessarily have to win this tournament, but they do need a good showing here. And, you know, they're going to have the opportunities, especially going against UNC. They played UNC very tough when they matched up earlier this season. So they're not going to be intimidated by them, and I think they're going to have a chance. Miami, it's been strange to see them be so bubblicious these last 2 years after going to Omaha the past 2 years before that. They do have the opportunity, though. I mean, they are above 500 finally, 27-25. They're 16-13 in the ACC. Their RPI is at 63. They have the chance, but I think they need more than just the one win. I think they need to make a bigger splash than that in the ACC tournament.
It's going to be very interesting to watch those two teams. I appreciated the opportunity to make option jokes when Georgia Tech dropped 20 runs on Duke. That was, I did appreciate that. And I think the Yellow Jackets are carrying some momentum into this. And
yeah, they just missed that extra point.
They did.
Won, they won 20-7.
Well, you know, the triple option is very difficult to prepare for. So you know, you can understand how it would catch Duke by surprise. So Georgia Tech, it really feels like a must win on Tuesday against Pitt. And then you know, just kind of see where it goes from there. See if they can find a way against North Carolina. You know, that's an intriguing team.
I think it's doable given how they matched up with UNC earlier this year. I don't think there's a huge disparity there. I mean, the key for Georgia Tech is they need depth on the mound from whoever's starting. That's the biggest key. If Georgia Tech can get at least six or seven innings from their starter, whoever they throw in that game, they're going to have a chance. But their bullpen, really haven't seen it in action. They do have some holes in that pen. It's very easy to put up runs against those guys, especially the middle inning guys. So they need some depth on the mound if they want to win some games in this tournament.
That's going to be one to watch. There's plenty to watch around the country. We already have 4 bids locked up for this year's NCAA tournament, so 60 more to go. The first 4 in, we got Texas Southern in the SWAC. You got North Carolina A&T in the MEAC. That's their first since 2005. Fullerton clinched the Big West title. And Army on Monday beat Navy to win the Patriot League. So very impressive season for Army. Texas Southern, I think that's 3 in the last 4 years. Very impressive for the, you know, the way that they've played in the SWAC tournament and in the SWAC in general, but to win 3 out of the last 4 SWAC tournament titles, very impressive for Texas Southern. North Carolina A&T getting back for the first time in more than a decade, and of course Fullerton just doing what Fullerton does. We'll see them in Omaha or something. You don't want to see them show up in your regional, that's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt, especially given their pitching staff and the way they've heated up down the stretch here. They've done this the last few years. This is what Rick Vanderhook's club does.
This is a more extreme version.
It is.
But it is still a version of it.
He's a magician. I'll tell you what. He's, you know, for my next act, I'm gonna start 0-20 next year. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't put it past them at this point. Every hole that they've dug themselves into the last few years, they've dug out of and made a deep run in the postseason. So if they were one of the 8 teams to make it to Omaha, I would not be surprised.
And we mentioned earlier the emotional, you know, way Texas responded to Augie Garrido's death. You saw the same thing out at Fullerton. those guys weren't recruited by Augie, like unlike the Longhorns, who a lot of that team was. But he still meant so much to that program. And after they won the title, to see the way they recognized him, they have a big commemorative decal, I don't know, on the outfield wall, and the team all went out there. And, you know, just to see those two programs, Augie Garrido is most associated with win conference titles this weekend, I think was a special moment for a lot of people around college baseball. We got plenty more to come this week, plenty more bids, tickets to be punched, bubbles to be busted, all sorts of stuff here in the conference tournaments to come.
And baseball to be played.
There will be baseball, I suppose. Yeah. I guess that's a thing that happens. There will be a lot of it played this week, actually, all over the place. Hopefully not too much rain. That's another thing that happens a lot of times with conference tournaments.
Well, now it's going to happen because you said it.
That's okay. It was happening anyway. So we'll be back here to talk about it next Monday. We'll have a field of 64, a real field of 64 to discuss. And I'm sure we'll break it down in all sorts of various ways. But keep it tuned to baseballamerica.com throughout this week. There will be projected field of 64, plenty of content from these conference tournaments and all sorts of fun stuff. And as Mike mentioned earlier, the draft is around the corner. So if that's a thing you're into, there are plenty of scouting reports to be read. The BA 500 is listed. There's all sorts of stuff there to keep you busy and over the next few weeks before the draft. Make sure to continue to follow us at baseballamerica.com and on Twitter. He's Mike Lanana, at M. Lanana on Twitter. It's a tongue twister. I'm Teddy Cahill. I'm at Ted Cahill on Twitter. And we'll be back here next week to talk with you guys. Thanks a lot for listening.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit baseballamerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.